The reason people aren't financially free is they don't know what to do and they don't know where to start. I want you to join Joey and I at the Virtual Inner Circle Live, April the 4th through the 6th, as we share with you the exact answers to those questions. We only do this event one time per year. I don't want you to miss out. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter promo code podcast. When you're at this event, you're going to get your investor DNA. You're going to get access to up to 6 different passive income strategies. So you know, leaving this event, exactly what to do, taking our decades of knowledge so that you can start becoming financially free. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter the promo code podcast.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the Idea Guy Morgan. Russ, I am seeing steam coming out of your ears right now, and I think it's for good reason.
Man, I just want you to know, you're listening to this. I love to try to give you what's going on in our life, sometimes give you a sneak peek into meetings that we're part of. And I love being in meetings, except when I'm head-to-head with another typical financial advisor. I was doing it as a favor to my client. I wanted to help them. I wanted to explain to their other advisor why we were doing some of the stuff we were doing. And bro, they did not want to learn.
Well, you got to have somebody that's willing to learn on the other end for that transaction to happen.
And that's, people wonder why they'll ask the question, why isn't everybody doing this infinite banking thing? Why isn't everybody using life insurance? And here's the key. Some people are so afraid to be wrong because they've made certain comments that they will not accept the numbers.
Yeah, if they accept what you're saying is true, that means in their mind, where's the Rolodex of people that they have to go back to and say, I was wrong? And that's sometimes unbearable.
It's hard. I had to do that. In 2009, once I learned about infinite banking, I had to call a lot of people and say, man, forgive me what I didn't know. And when I was on this phone call, sharing with them what we were doing, and I said, let's put egos aside. Let's put opinions to the side. Let's just look at numbers.
Data.
And we started trying to look at the numbers. Did they keep looking or did they go back to opinion?
No. It was all about, but wait a minute, there's commissions. And wait a minute, there's cost of insurance here.
Exactly. There's
so sure the is. Bias is coming out.
It's in the numbers. Okay, let's go back to the numbers and let's see what the numbers say. And it was like, well, but I have more liquidity or more flexibility over here. Like, wait a second. Do you not know I'm in cash? How can you have more flexibility than cash?
Yeah. It was very obvious, but I think what you're trying to get to, Russ, is our interview today with Chris Noggle. Chris Noggle was the typical financial advisor, successful, and yet what comes out in this interview, it wasn't always what he was presenting to clients is what he was doing.
Yeah, it's very obvious. There's lots of books out there. Liar's Poker is one by Michael Lewis, the same guy who wrote the book, The Big Short, Moneyball, where it talks about what's going on behind the scenes in Wall Street. And Chris Noggle shares a little bit of what he was doing differently than what he was teaching his clients, and then had a revelation. He also had an HGTV show at one time, and he's teaching people a lot of the same things that we teach. And I just think this is a really refreshing interview that you can hear how and why sometimes the financial advisors you're talking to don't accept what we know is truth. Because sometimes, man, that lie, when you keep telling it to yourself, it becomes truth. And it's just so hard to get off of that.
Yeah. So Chris has now turned into real estate investor mogul. He is teaching people across the country how money works, where to find money for your deals. There's so many good nuggets in here. I don't want to wait any longer. Let's jump into this interview with Chris Noggle. Dad, do you have to go to work today? If you're tired of having to answer yes to that question, and you're ready to stop trading time for money, join Russ and I on this journey to financial freedom at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
This is the place where you can take control You can pick your own path and get there faster. Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
Welcome. We have the distinct pleasure of having Chris Noggle in the studio all the way from Buffalo, New York.
Absolutely.
Here today.
Honored to be here.
Man, we got a chance to spend a little time with you actually on your podcast. And today we're going to like reverse roles here.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Which is, I think, either harder for us because Joey and I are good at talking, not good at asking questions. So forgive us for our misses. But a couple years ago, you had a really cool opportunity, and I want you to bring that to us and tell us what that was. But first, that opportunity was snatched away from you, like an amazing lifetime opportunity snatched away from you. You got on a phone call that you wasn't expecting, and all of a sudden, this thing's gone. Tell us a little bit about what was going on there.
So 2014, I got the big old idea of having our own TV show. And I got my wife on board and we started filming our own show. And 4 years later, we actually landed on HGTV. And our show, we were the number two show coming out of Greenlight. So that means, if you don't know what that means you are literally the highest rated show going through the pipeline of HGTV. Then we aired. And it's a terrible process. So I would never want anyone to have to go through what we did. But you just keep airing. And the ratings come in, you're out biting your nails. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh my God, the ratings were great. Then you get another airing, and then another airing, and another airing. And what ended up happening is we got all the way through these airings where we were airing on primetime in the series of Flip or Flop. We literally had it. So the other part of this is you have to understand is I had Flip Out Academy, which is my real estate education company. We had our real estate operations, which were thriving. And then I had this thing called Money School, and all these businesses were literally, picture a rocket, right, sitting on the tarmac waiting to take off. All somebody needs to do is hit a button, light those rockets, and that sucker's in space. That was all of my businesses. That rocket was HGTV, our series, and we had it. So our whole life was about to just explode to a level I can't even fathom.
The anticipation is huge.
It was almost frightening, okay? And we got so into it that your whole life becomes circled around this thing. And we had it. And then one night when we knew we were going to get a call from HG to tell us, and you know, we were thinking, we're going, let's go. And I get the call and it was like this. I answered all excited. Hey, what's going on? You know, I've been waiting for your call. Hey, we got some bad news. We're actually not going to move forward with the series. Discovery, you know, just bought HGTV and we're going a different direction. So kind of like, sorry about your luck.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm driving home to my wife. My wife doesn't know this yet. And my wife is obviously, she's the designer behind almost the key person in the show.
So you got to deliver the news.
Correct. So through my head, and many people watching this can probably relate, I'm thinking, do I hit the accelerator and drive as fast as I can into a tree? Or do I drive home and figure out how to tell my wife this? Obviously, I'm here. So I drove home and I got home and I told my wife, but I just felt like everything we'd worked for had just crumbled because of one phone call. And you know, in life, that'll happen more times than not. That door will slam in your face, but that's what happened.
All right, so let's back up a little bit because that is an amazing story that ends poorly right there. But I know that's not where the story began either. So you mentioned like in 2014, you started this, but even before that, what were you doing before you decided to create your own reality real estate show?
Gosh, I've done so many things. I've been self-employed since 16. I grew up in a very low income household, very low income family. Dad was an alcoholic and mom had to raise me. And, you know, it was a weird dynamic. So I always had to hustle and fight my way everywhere I was. But I started at 16. I started my own little clothing line, selling shirts out of my backpack in school. It's called Fat Clothing Company. And then my next big dream was to open a retail store. I wanted to open a skateboard, snowboard shop. I'm an old snowboarder, if you haven't figured that out, skateboard snowboarder. And my dream was to be a professional snowboarder. Well, if you're going to be a professional snowboarder, well, you got to have a snowboard shop. It's just hand, foot. Yeah, you know, sure. You need the lifestyle business. I had no money. And at 17, I got this idea for the shop called Fat Man Board Shops, spelled P-H-A-T.
Yeah. Okay.
And
thank you for clarifying.
Yeah. And I had to go around and I had to raise $70,000. I didn't know anything about raising money. So I got... Everybody told me, no, no way, heck no, kid, you're crazy. And I almost gave up. But my mom had the house in the divorce and she put her house on the line so her crazy 17-year-old punk snowboard kid could chase his dream. And that's where it all began. So I ran those stores. But what ended up happening is you know, in fairy tale land. I was a pro snowboarder at this point, running my stores. Life was good. And in 2000, 9/11, actually, when the plane hit the tower, my whole business came crashing down. I'd never gone through a recession. Right. And I landed in the financial services world. I actually landed working for New York Life. And I thought, this is just a temporary thing. I just need to get back on my feet and then I'll kind of come back to the store. But I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I did really well at it. And from there, I climbed the ropes through the financial advisor world. I was speaking at national conventions for New York Life on different whole life strategies, not this, yeah, but different strategies. And then I ended up in Wall Street. I ended up doing managed money, working for large Wall Street firms like Schwab and a couple other ones. And, you know, I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I had my rosy colored glass. You guys got any of those glasses here?
We were all out.
Good. Actually. Good. Don't reorder those. Yeah. But I had those rosy colored glasses on and, you know, I was in a fairy tale world, you know, and still pro snowboarder. I'd sold my retail shops at that point, but that's kind of what led up to this point. And I was doing some real estate, which is how the real estate trickled in.
Yeah. So I want to know a little bit about that. So you started a real estate show that was based on risky builders, right? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right. So, let me go back a little bit further. So okay, Everything was going great until 2008.
Yeah.
When 2008 hit, I was deep into the development of a strip mall and the bottom fell out. I almost went bankrupt. And then I had to rethink everything. So Warren Buffett, we all know who he is. He says, buy low. So I started buying real estate. That's what I did. I just bought as much real estate as I could from 9 to 14. And in 14, I thought everything was all good. I had 36 units and I realized I was in trouble again. I was literally using the same conventional knowledge I'd been taught as an advisor. And I kept doing the same things over and over. And then I was living paycheck to paycheck again.
All right, hold on. I got to stop you there a second. So during this time, you're still a Wall Street advisor.
Absolutely.
So you're a Wall Street advisor, and yet you are investing in real estate.
Yes, I was.
When did that ever come up in conversation with your clients?
Almost never. I couldn't make any money talking about real estate to my clients. And remember, the rosy colored glasses were still on. So I was always selling a product or charging a management fee, or that was all I was doing. So I wasn't talking about real estate with them. I was doing it because so many people that I was around that were wealthy because of real estate. That's how it happened.
Well, and it's just an interesting point I wanted to make is like, you're not even eating your own cooking at that point, right?
I wasn't.
That's what Russ would say.
But you and I have been behind that. You've seen behind the curtain of the Wall Street advisor building. You know that that's more often the case than not. I mean, Robert Kiyosaki calls Wall Street brokers, meaning that they're broker than you.
it's so true.
I mean, because it really is. It's just a business where they make money selling things, but they don't own those things, no. Right? And like you said, if they really see what people are making money in, like real estate, they're not going to tell you about it because they don't make money telling you about it. So they may end up doing it themselves, but they're not going to advise you to do it. They're going to keep advising you to put the money in the portfolio.
And we could talk for an hour all about what you just said, about the reasons why people don't understand what the wealthy do with money. And it all comes down to one simple principle. The advisors and the people that are giving the financial advice to everybody, they can't get paid on it. Yeah. And if they can't get paid or they can't get paid enough, they're not going to tell you about it.
Yeah.
And I knew this. Like you said, I was doing real estate. 2006 was my first flip. And then I started buying real estate in 2009 to 14. I never talked to my clients about this. If they were close to me, they knew I was dabbling in real estate. But if Matt brought it up, I'm like, well, let's go back to that Apple stock. Or, you know, how's that portfolio looking? We need to spruce that thing up. Like, let's throw an annuity in there or something like that. You know, and I'm ashamed really looking back at it.
Hey, it's all right.
I had to learn, right? You have to sometimes fail to succeed. And my failures, even though I wasn't failing financially with that, my failures were what I was doing. I wasn't doing what I would do with my own money.
If you want to know what it's like, what's really what Chris and I are talking about, there's a book out there, Michael Lewis, Liar's Poker.
Absolutely.
And it goes into that. That's the same guy who wrote The Big Short, which is a great, great film. Also the one that did the baseball movie and the name of it is escaping me right now with Brad Pitt, Moneyball. Yeah. So Liar's Poker though talks about exactly this thing where the advisors behind the scenes are doing completely different. It's a sales operation. All right. So take us back then to 2014.
All right. So 2014, we had just come through some really hard times of 08, almost going bankrupt, got back on my feet, started buying real estate, like Warren Buffett said. And then in 2014, the funny thing is, you know, we're constantly using the same conventional knowledge that we're taught. We think money all works the same way because it's all we know. So I was borrowing from traditional banks in my personal name, and I kept doing this. I got up to 36 units. I was still an advisor, right, on Wall Street, making great money. But in 14, a unique thing happened. Just when I thought I had it, 36 units, things seemed to be getting there. I got notified by my bank that I hit literally what they call the proverbial financial wall. And I don't know if you know anything about that, but when you're borrowing personally, the banks will only allow you to buy and borrow as much up to your debt to income ratio. But I'm buying rentals, right? So you would think I got the rent roll coming in. So that's supporting these properties, which right. It was, but the bank thought different. They froze my lines of credit. They wouldn't issue me any more mortgages. I was dead in the water. Properties weren't finished. I had so much going on. So I went from like trying to build this back up and, you know, coming from the bottom, and I'm almost there. And then all of a sudden I'm in trouble again. Because I kept doing this. I kept making the same mistakes over and over again. And that led to me being paycheck to paycheck again. I think I said that earlier. And we had to sell all 36 units, me and my wife. And not only that, that's nothing because that's rental properties, right? We sold them. We made a little money. But then we had to sell our dream house. We had just bought our dream house not a year and a half prior. And now we were forced to have to sell that.
So this all led you to deciding that you're going to create a real estate reality TV show. Somewhere
not
along.
Quite yet, but we're very close. So let me bridge the gap. Yeah. So we had to sell the house. We had a lot of problems at that point. I just wanted to quit. I just wanted to throw the towel in at that point. I didn't even know what I was going to do. So then in the mail, so you maybe have got these. I got one of these postcards said, come to this three-day workshop to learn how to flip houses. That's the postcard I got. Right. And when I say that, people are like, if I heard your story, like, what is wrong with you? Like, don't you ever learn? Yeah. And I wasn't going to this seminar to learn how to flip houses. You see, I was so humbled by my failures up to this point. I had nothing to lose, but by going to the seminar, they were giving away a free iPod shuffle. I wanted that iPod shuffle so bad. So
motivation.
So I had nothing to lose. I had an iPod shuffle to gain. Off I went. And day one, nothing special, but day two, everything changed. And this is the pivotal moment, like that one breakthrough moment that I had. And it wasn't on flipping houses. What I learned is I learned what the wealthy were doing, what the successful real estate investors were doing, and what the elite were doing was the exact opposite of what I was doing. And then I was like, wait a second. I'm this big fancy Wall Street advisor. I'm making all this money, you know, doing this stuff. Like, why are these guys doing something completely opposite that I was never taught? Why am I not doing that? Why wasn't I taught that? So I was angry. Then I went on to find out that they don't teach this stuff. You know this. Yeah. They don't teach us this stuff. They don't want us to know this stuff. And I learned the only way to get this knowledge is to seek it out. So how do you find this knowledge? Well, you seek it out. You find the people that know the secrets, the people that know the truth. Well, because of this seminar, I was attached and associated with these people now. I just started following them around. And that took money. Swiping the cards, maxing credit cards out. My wife was not thrilled. We spent $80,000 from 2014 to 16, literally following the wealthy around. The multimillionaires, the billionaires, joining masterminds, paying for mentorships with one of my best mentors, Ron Klein, who founded the magnetic strip on the back. Mm-hmm. He created that. He created the bond quotation system. He created the MLS. I mean, he's the grandfather of possibility, but I paid him more money than I could afford every month just to learn what he knew. And I did this, and that's what got me off the hamster wheel. That's what got me from having money and then being broke and then having money again and being broke. And that's when it all changed.
So how did that then lead you to, okay, we need to start a TV show?
Well,
I mean, those don't seem like they're
connected. They don't, but connected. They absolutely are. Because while we were going to these events, these high-level events, we met Tarek and Christina from Flip or Flop. And we saw them. We were in the front row. We always sat in the front row. My wife loved it. Like, let's get right up there. And Tarek and Christina got on that stage. We both looked at each other and we said, if we're ever going to be on that stage, we got to have a TV show. And that's where the idea was born. I took Jackass, if you've ever seen that movie, like right. I was a skateboard snowboarder. So I took that movie and I took Flip or Flop and I combined the two and we came up with Flip Out TV. And that was our pilot. I hired a filmer. I spent $40,000 over the course of a year filming our pilot, filming our sizzles. And we sent it out to all the producers and we got told no. Yeah. You were waiting for a big yes, right? Yeah. We got told no. And that producer like just kind of let it die in the vine. But then I was persistent. I sent that sizzle out to another producer who picked it up and, long story short, got us right on HGTV. That's how it happened. That's the truth of the matter. But it, most people think, oh, you know, you got a, you're flipping houses. Someone notices you and, hey, here's a TV show.
Yeah.
No, it's not the way it happened.
No, you got 4 years. Pitch. Yeah. You're spending tons and tons of time, tons and tons of money trying to get their attention. And you did. And then it all just went away with one phone call. Right.
Right. But you see the lead up to that. So you can understand mentally, emotionally, everything gets so deeply ingrained into that one dream, that one idea. And we had it.
Yeah.
And the door slammed in my face.
All right. So there's something you said a second ago that I want to draw out, which I think tells us where you're going now, but because I know the story didn't end there, but you mentioned that you got really frustrated because you started learning what the wealthy, the elite were doing. What were some of those things?
So they were not investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds. They were, okay, so I'm going to say this, but then I got to explain this because we're thinking two different things. They were the bank.
Yeah.
The one gentleman, Greg, who is my most admired person still today, is a dear friend. His whole slogan, every time he talked about being the bank, and it's the ultimate. Like, you can flip houses, but it's a job. You can wholesale, but it's still a transaction you got to keep doing to make money. You can do rentals, but then you got tenants calling you on every Christmas and every holiday and Sunday. Being the bank's the ultimate. Everybody needs money for their deals. I lend them money, but me and Larissa kept saying, well, we're going to be the bank when we have enough money.
Right.
When this happens, someday, you know, all those things. But the reality is do banks use their own money?
No.
Absolutely not. So why would I think that I needed to have all this money in order to be the bank? And I learned they weren't using their own money. I started learning these principles of what they did, how they did it, the mimicking of what banks do, the mimicking of what every wealthy person has done for hundreds of years. But then I started learning a little bit more, and that's kind of what led me to what we're really going to talk about. And I was in Utah, and I was talking with Mike. Mike had a TV show on A&E, and we're just at a cheesecake factory, and Mike's talking about this thing, like this crazy thing that he's using to lend money from it, and he's doing it tax-free, and he's getting paid on the money even when it's not there. And I'm like leaning close, and I can't lean any closer. I'll be in the mic, but you know, I'm leaning in. And I'm just like, dude, yes, what is this? And then like, he starts telling me about it, and I start leaning back, and I'm like, no, man, I used to work, Mike, it doesn't work that way. So whatever you're telling me about, I think you're talking about life insurance, but life insurance doesn't work that way, buddy. You can't use the money immediately. You can't just put money in and take it right out. Well, you can, but not the way you're explaining it. And I kept going with it. He's like, I don't know, man, I'm doing it. So whatever I'm doing, I think it's definitely life insurance, but you're saying it's not. Just call this guy. So here, me, you know, and I got to say there was a bit of arrogance because obviously I was an advisor. Advisors know everything, right?
Well, you knew it from your days at New York Life too.
Right. You know, I walked this walk. Right. I knew this stuff. You can't tell me that this is how it works when I've never been shown this in my entire career. Right. And you know, you see, Greg had already told me about this, but Greg and Mike were good friends. I just want everybody to understand the parallel between Mike and Greg. So Greg talked about being the bank. It has a book, Bank on This, I think it's called. And then Mike is his good friend and partner, and they're both doing this. But I never understood the mechanism, the machine they used to do all this. And I called this gentleman by the name of Brent. And I said, Brent, like, I'm an advisor, blah, blah, blah. I know about all this stuff. Like, I need to know about this. And I was excited. And you can hear I'm speeding up my talks. I'm getting excited again, thinking about that moment. And you know what he says to me? He says, you know, that's great, Chris. I'd love to talk to you, but first you have to watch a video. No problem, Brent. Send me the video. How long is it? How long is it? An hour and a half? Brent, buddy, I don't have an hour and a half, man. I barely like have enough time to like brush my teeth, let alone watch an hour and a half video. All right, I'll watch it. Now, so you know how in life sometimes like things happen and you just remember them so vividly? I remember that Sunday walking down the stairs with my coffee because I'm like, this is going to be long. And I get in front of the computer, I log in, and I'm like, here we go. And it starts off slow. And then like that, it was over and I had 4 pages of notes. And I was even more ticked off than I was before because what he said in that video, what I learned was literally something that I should have learned back in 2004. It should have been the first thing I was taught when I started at New York Life, but never once. in the 14 years at New York Life and the 16 and a half years as an advisor was I ever even remotely shown what I just watched in an hour and a half video. Yeah. I was not happy, but I was so excited that I'd finally learned this and I finally connected all these dots that I put together with all these mentors and all this money that I spent. I figured the secret out.
So, all right. So walk us through from that point. That's a turning point, right? Mm-hmm. That's like a light bulb moment. What comes from there?
The next thing that happened is, you know, you would think, okay, now I start doing this, right? I start taking this on. Absolutely not. See, I was so excited just about what this machine did, what this system did. I just applied it. I said, Brent, sign me up, buddy. Here's how much money I can put away. Get it going. And then he not only said that, but remember, I came from New York Life. So you have to understand, I had four policies. I had an awesome variable universal life, garbage. I had a universal life that I thought was the greatest thing since sliced bread, garbage. And I had a couple of good whole lives that I bought during my career as a New York Life agent. And all these things had cash value and I'd used it, but never used it. Right. You know what I mean? I'd used the money, but I never really used it. So what we did is now I had this new one and I had all my old ones and I put them together and I literally used that money in this system to fund my real estate business. My real estate was always starved for money because remember, real estate, we were doing tons of flips, you're always in a cash flow situation. But now all of a sudden I had a mechanism where I just loaned myself money to my LLC and my LLC paid me back out of rent roll and profits. And all of a sudden I'm like, now I'm being the bank. Now I'm doing what Greg and Mike were talking about. I'm doing it.
Right.
And I got so excited about doing this and it worked so well that, you know, we amassed all this debt. Guess what? The debt was gone in 3 years, not even 3 years, 2 years. I think we got rid of all of our debt in 2 years using this system. And it wasn't so much the system, it was the recapture. I started taking back all the money I was giving away to everybody else before, and I got out of debt. That was like the first time in this whole talk that I didn't really have any debt outside of mortgages. It was amazing. So I was so thrilled. I'm like, all my friends need to know about this. I had a RIA, like a real estate meeting we did every month. All those people need to learn about this. So I started calling Brent. Hey, Brent, can you come out and like speak at our RIA and like tell everybody what you showed me? Because they got to hear this. So Brent started coming out and doing our events. And then I'm like, this is so cool. Why don't I start doing these in Florida? So I'd call some friends in Florida and be like, guys, you guys watch this video and put an event on. You have to tell your friends about this. So we started doing that. And yeah, that continued on for several years.
I mean, this is an amazing thing. So you were an advisor for a while. One, you were in the life with a life insurance company. Then you go into the traditional Wall Street firm. You have to give up all your license, which I don't know if we touched on that.
We haven't got there yet.
Yeah.
Because remember, during all this stuff I'm talking about, I'm still an advisor.
Okay.
I was an advisor up until October of 2018.
Okay. We'll talk about that then.
Yeah. So now, remember, I'm using all this. I'm having Brent do these events. And then all of a sudden, when I got this HGTV shot, I had to give up my licenses. That number 7, the series 7, I had to hang that up on the wall and I had to retire from the advisory firm. And then when that door slammed in my face, well, that door slamming of that HGTV show marked that point when I was able to actually go out and start talking about the truth about what wealthy really do, the secrets of the wealthy. And I got to also talk not only about that, I got to talk about the big lie that I had lived for 16 and a half years as an advisor. Because when you're an advisor, you can't talk bad about Wall Street. Shame on you.
Right.
No, no, no. You got to put the glasses on every day. That's why I asked if you had any of those glasses, because right. I would have broke them. So at that point, I had a ticket to go out there and do what I should have been doing all along. And now I had the secrets. I knew what the wealthy did, not just this thing I was using, but so many other things that I had learned on this journey. So now when that door slammed and I didn't get the show, the other door just opened. Greg opened it for me. And then Brent opened it later. And I just started going out and I love speaking. And now that's what I do. I travel all around the country, even Canada. We got to call that the country plus.
Yeah.
travel up there and I teach people all about the secrets of the wealthy. And I teach them how they can change their life like my life was changed.
And you're showing them how to apply real estate investing through this. Because what a beautiful, do you see those things? Like, and I haven't done it, and somebody else will probably take this idea and run with it. But I read Robert Kiyosaki and I read Becoming Your Own Banker. And I thought, man, these two should be together. Somebody should write a book on those two books and bring those together, because it really is the perfect marriage, isn't it?
Sorry, I'm laughing.
You're laughing. Going. No, that's it. Well, I don't have any more.
Before this podcast, remember what I said I'm doing?
Writing
I just commissioned a ghostwriter to write a book, right?
Yeah.
You didn't even know that what you just said is exactly what I set out to do. Robert Kiyosaki's principles, what he taught, Second Chance, all the things in that book, and Nelson Nash's book, there's a parallel in between that was never covered yet. I'm venturing that road. I'm writing that book.
Good for you.
I'm hopefully
good idea, Russ.
Thanks, Russ.
Let me just have a forward in that somewhere.
Yeah, we'll get you a forward in that for sure. But no, it's so weird that you said that. That's how the idea for the book started. I read Robert Kiyosaki's books. Second Chance was the last one. And obviously Nelson Nash's book I've read, I don't even know how many times now. I just don't have the page numbers memorized yet. Yeah. Do you know the page numbers for every section?
I know a bunch
Most of them.
Oh, that's crazy. So I haven't got there yet. Yeah. But I love both of those books, and they're so powerful, but nobody's filled that gap in between. And that's what I want to do.
Well, and it is. It is a powerful idea, because in real estate, you need a bank, right? And who better to be the bank than ourselves? Mm-hmm. We know that we deposit money in banks. We borrow money from banks. They get to make the margin off the difference. And if we can fill that void, which a lot of us can, most people, they'll take that money and they stick it in retirement plans. Oh. And they put it away for 30 years and don't touch it. So then they have to use someone else's bank. And we kind of pull these things together. And I mean, I'm just so excited that you're out there touching people on a weekly basis with this message. You're doing it not only live from the stage, but also you're doing it on a podcast. Yep. And you're doing a webinar. So tell little people about your kind of podcast and other things that's going on there.
Yeah. So the podcast is called The Real Estate Money School. And really, it's exactly that. It's real estate, but how money really works in real estate. It's the principles that you just mentioned, being the bank. But it's the biggest problem in real estate is people need money. Right? It's a business that you have to have money, but everybody stops because they think they have to have the money, right? But it's never about your actual resources. It's about how resourceful you can be. So that podcast is about where all the money is and then how to actually go and get it. But then what I wanted to do is I wanted to tell the story, the journey. Everybody looks at these super successful people, all these billionaires and millionaires. I call them my friends now, but you know, to other people, they look at them like, oh my gosh, Grant Cardone, Ed Milet, like, these are superstars, but they're just people. And if it's easy to look at where they're at today, but nobody ever really has ever done a good job of looking at how they got there. What was their journey like? And if their journey was anything like my nightmare of a journey, then I'm onto something. And what I started doing is I started interviewing these people on my podcast to find out how many times did they fall on their face? How many times did they fail to succeed? How many no's did they get before they got a yes? And how much did they have to put up with to get where they're at? And how did money play into that? Yeah. That's the podcast. That's exactly what that thing is.
Well, it is. As entrepreneurs, we know that failure is just a part of it. It's how we respond. How many times do we get up, fall five, get up six, right? And it's a beautiful thing. And I encourage you to go out and listen to that podcast, especially if you're in the real estate world, because this is something Chris is driving home on a weekly basis. Man, this has just been a cool story. We could do this on and on mm-hmm. and on. There's a lot of things that when you were talking about that 90-minute video, now you're out there, you're teaching people on that. Would you be willing to come in our community and maybe teach a little bit on that?
I would love to. I'd love to teach people the parallel of like how the infinite banking concept works in real estate and also in life, and just show all of that.
All right. Well, if you're not already a member of the community, you need to jump on, because Chris next week is going to be doing this live in the community. He's going to be showing you how these two pieces come together, how you use life insurance, not your uncle's State Farm policy, right? Not the policy the guy at Northwestern is trying to shove down your throat. And we're not talking about that. We're literally talking about a policy designed for you to be the bank, for you to take control over your finances, and how to take an asset like what the wealthy use, real estate, and pair those things together. And it sounds like we got a new book coming down the road that that Chris is going to be writing. I'm excited to hear about that. Parting shot, Stallion.
I think like we could have just hung out here all day. So I'm kind of sad that it's over, but grateful that you were so open and candid about your process and your journey. And man, I'm excited for things to come. So thank you for sharing with us.
Oh, you guys are welcome. Thank you so much for having me on.
If you've been listening to our podcast, you're like, man, I love what you guys are talking about. I want to build passive income through one of these five pillars that you're talking about, but how do I do it? Stallion, tell them. It is so easy.
So easy that we created the longest URL possible. So you may want to write this down. freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Go to freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com and you can set up your call with one of us. We're excited to talk to you.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.